2024. Call the meeting to order. If you'll join me, we'll start with our Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Long-standing tradition. Today we've got a fairly robust agenda. I hope everybody's had a chance to kind of read through those items. I will ask for or entertain a motion to approve the agenda as it's presented.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion approved. Commissioner comments.
Congratulations on Delta.
Yep.
It's a big, exciting day. Great turnout.
It's like one of those 1,000-piece puzzles you have to put together to make it happen, and then boom, then they show up. Well, that was easy. Yes, you're going to show up for the flight to come in, you know. So thanks for putting the pieces of the puzzle together through your whole team. That was nice.
Yeah.
Also, during commissioner comments, I'd like to recognize one of our employees today, Victoria Hightower. Victoria shared with me that I think you've seen seven different executive directors somewhere in there during your tenure, but she's only been here 10 years. But the beauty of it is the last six or seven have been fairly stable, which was really good. And you were the glue, part of the glue, that held all this together. So thank you. Why don't you come up? We'll recognize you with your 10-year anniversary award. And let's give her a round of applause. If you want a few stories about the airport, hang out with Victoria for a little bit. And she'll give you a lens that we may not have seen for the last six. So.
Victoria has the most interesting first month of work of anyone I've ever known. When was that her first month?
And I think your little boy Eric is two?
He'll be three at the end of this month.
Three? Wow.
2 days after Christmas.
Is he sleeping through the night? Okay. We were just talking about that. Congratulations. That's even more to celebrate than these 10 years. All right, very good. Any other commissioner comments today? Again, thank you for putting everything together for Delta. Citizen comments.
Mr. Chairman, we do not have any citizen comments today. But, Mr. Chairman, if you wouldn't mind, can we go backwards a little?
And the roll call. Roll call
so we can have it for record.
Right, absolutely. I was going to do that, but I just got out of order.
Thank you.
Sorry. Okay, no citizen comments. We'll quickly do a roll call for commissioners that are here today. Commissioner Schrader.
Here.
Commissioner Marshall.
Here.
Commissioner Kleinman.
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy.
Here.
Online we have, let's see, we still have one of our members online. Perhaps, no. Okay. Well, we might have had one of our commissioners online. At any rate, can you do the roll call for staff today, please?
Yes, I can. So, in the room, we have Executive Director Angela Padalecki, Finance Manager Jennifer Croker, Director of Operations Dylan Heberlein, Human Resource Manager Victoria Hightower, Finance Specialist Travis Portmeier, Office Coordinator Christina Warren, and myself, Cameron Reese, the Board Clerk.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate that, Cameron. Also online today, we have Jeremy Lee from Mead & Hunt. Welcome, Jeremy. Nice to have you here. Our legal counsel, Dan Reimer, is here with us as well. Let's see, Gavin Duncan. Is Gavin with us today online?
Yes.
Yep.
Rebecca Wagner from Gensler's here as well. Becca Fall, did I get that right?
Yes.
From Gensler. She's here. And in present, we have Jen Bowen. Jen, thank you for being here. And Austin Rankin from Mead & Hunt. Thank you for being here. We also have our staff members as well. Did I miss somebody online?
We have Harrison Earl from Crawford, Murphy & Tilley.
Okay. Welcome, Harrison.
And Ryan. I'm not sure who Ryan is.
Springer, good afternoon.
Hey, Ryan.
Our sequin helper. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate you being here. Okay. I think we've recognized folks that are with us today for the record. Consent agenda. Has everybody had a chance to look at that? It's just the minutes. Entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Action items today. First action item is a letter concerning Credit Card Competition Act. It came before us through the interest of American Airlines and others that are supporting this. And I think, Angela, you had received comments from our state representatives as well for that. And I think Dan will discuss this in a little bit more detail. But Angela, if you want to just give us an overview of kind of why we were thinking we should discuss this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So the Credit Card Competition Act includes a provision that significantly affects the mileage programs, the reward programs from airlines. And so one of a pretty well-known lobbyist, Kelly Sloan, who lobbies on behalf of airlines, also airports in Colorado, he had reached out. Rep. Matt Soper had reached out as well. And then eventually American Airlines reached out last week. And so that compelled me to discuss with the executive committee whether they felt like this is something that the board should contemplate action on. Again, that request is just to oppose the Credit Card Competition Act. The American Airlines government affairs rep wasn't available. He wasn't able to log on for the meeting, but he asked me to share with you a note. And he said, the bottom line is that the CCCA turns American's business model on its head. If not for the revenue derived from our Advantage program, we would not be profitable. Should those revenues be removed, we would have to raise prices and cut service. Both are bad for the consumer. There are many other airports who have signed on to this. According to our state lobbyist, Kelly Sloan, Telluride and Aspen have also provided letters of opposition, as well as all airports in the state of South Carolina, hundreds of airports across the country. There are also plenty of airports that have not provided opposition. So with that, Dan, I'll turn it over to you so that you can cover anything you want to cover on this and answer any questions, if that's okay.
Welcome, Dan.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to share some thoughts. I mean, I will say, as your legal counsel, I am agnostic as to whether or not the board approves this letter. My general thought and admonition is that we should stay pretty tight to our collective roles as stewards of this airport, and making sure that we are not straying too far into general economic development concerns. I think the risk to the airport is a bit attenuated. The way that the CCCA would operate is that it would make those rewards programs more difficult to administer by the airlines and their credit card partners. That might discourage use of mileage and rewards programs for travel. That might impact the level of traffic at our airport, and that might hurt our bottom line. And so I feel that there is a relationship, but a somewhat attenuated relationship. So that's why I say I'm generally agnostic as to whether or not we want to approve the letter. You all want to approve the letter, but in general, I just want to make sure that we are staying in our lane as the airport operator and not as an arm of the general economic development groups.
Questions for Dan? Yes, Lee.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. I'm just curious how these programs got woven into this CCCA Act, and who's driving the credit card component of that legislation?
Yeah, I honestly, Lee, don't know a lot of those details about sort of how this all came to be. It's not, as I understand it, really targeted at these mileage and rewards programs. They seem to be collateral damage. There is something that's different going on about sort of credit card payment processing, which, as you all know, is a very big business. And so I think my assessment, it could be wrong, is that this is a separate bite and that the rewards programs are sort of bycatch being caught in the net here. They're not the intended target of the legislation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's what I understood too.
Dan, can you give us a summary of, or maybe a synonym, if you will, for as you read this? For example, I guess there's a couple thoughts. To the extreme side, you might say the legislation requires Coke to share their secret formula with Pepsi. On maybe the other side, it might look like the distribution channels for Coke products would be shared by, if they were privatized distribution, they'd be required to share those same distribution channels with Pepsi. Those are the kind of the ways I sort of read that and looked at it. Tell me how far that off that is or how close that might be.
Yeah, I think it has more to do with choice and distribution for credit card processing than it does for the secret formula. So that is my sort of 36,000 foot level overview, is that it has more to do with kind of the cost and the opportunities for choice or limits on choice for processing these transactions. So it's more about the distribution network than it is about sort of the proprietary secret sauce of what makes Coke Coke.
So in the event that United has developed their own distribution channel for their card or Delta or whomever, it looks to me like this might be saying you need to provide distribution channels on your railroad, bus, whatever you want to say, for other companies to use in that process.
I think that's right, is that it's opening up competition in a way that those credit cards and their airline partners view as sort of diluting the power of those rewards programs.
Thank you for the 35,000 foot, because I couldn't tell for sure either.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line remains both Airlines for America and, as Angela said, the individual legacy carriers seem very sure that this legislation, if enacted, would limit the use and the availability of their rewards and mileage programs. They seem very clear that that is a, whether it's intended or unintended, consequence of the legislation. And those co-branded programs are very important for the airlines, and they want them to be very important for their partners in the hospitality and transportation industries, including us.
And the net result is, kind of as you said before, it could weaken the economic profitability of those, and then they take a harder look at which routes they can maintain, and hence small airports like ours might see some of the impacts of that. Is that the analogy?
Well, I think that's fair, but I guess I would say that the more direct impact would be that many people fly on miles, and if the power of and value of those miles is diluted, that would retard and suppress traffic to our airport and other airports.
Just reduce.
So if you had fewer people who are able to use miles for travel, we would have fewer travelers, on the assumption that people need to use miles because they don't have the money in their pocket for grandparents to go see their grandkids or whatever it might be.
Thank you for providing more clarity. Any other questions?
Just a quick question. Do you know, or Angela, do you know if we collect the passenger facility charges on a mileage ticket as opposed to a pay ticket?
I can't remember eligibility, Dan. Do you know on PFC eligibility?
Many of those, even when you fly on miles, there's usually a tax and other things that you end up paying. There's often a cost component, even when your ticket is fully supported by miles. I recall that PFCs are part of that we do collect PFCs. I honestly, it's a good airport trivia question that I should know the answer, but I just don't off the top of my head. Like,
we'll report back on January.
Oh, go ahead. We have Harrison.
Good.
On.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dan. I hate contradicting you, but I am a PFC.
It's a revenue passenger.
It. So So the PFCs are not collected on award tickets. They are, security fees are, and other airport charges, so your normal rates and charges are absolutely collected, but not the PFC specifically.
Yeah, it's a revenue passenger.
Thanks for adding additional clarity, Harrison. And Dan, thank you for your read. Any other questions for our experts online? Okay, we'll move the item here, entertain a motion, then we'll have discussion.
I move that we approve a letter opposing the federal legislation jeopardizing credit card rewards programs.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Discussion on the item, on the motion.
So I heard a little bit about this recently. I'd actually had another person had reached out to see if I would support this, and the city really doesn't need to take a position on this, but from the aspect of the airport and that those miles programs, that's, I think, significant and probably something worth us leaning into.
Okay.
So that's kind of my position on it, that I think it makes sense for us to oppose it, in that we need those frequent flyer program miles to work right, and to continue working. And I think there's some very specific beneficiaries to this program that aren't necessarily in our best interest.
Thanks for weighing in on that, Cody.
I think I'm still trying to understand the exact correlation between the two. And it sounds like, just from reading while we were listening to everybody, what's happening is right now, the very few avenues of the banking that happen to collect fees from the transactions, from when you swipe your card at a retail outlet, that percentage fee is kind of high. And all of that is going to, when Air American calls us and says, don't let this happen, all of those fees, some portion of them are getting routed to them if you're using an American card or when I'm using my Delta card. And those massive fees support them feeling good about giving away the freebies, which are the airline miles. And so, if I understand this right, this is a bipartisan effort to break up that monopoly and allow the consumer to pay less fees and final retailers. I mean, we're looking at it just from an airline and airport standpoint, but if the end result is to allow folks with money in their pocket to keep it in their pocket instead of paying it to credit card companies, that in my mind seems like a good thing to try and do to break up the monopoly. And so I'm struggling a little bit. It seems like a bit of a scare tactic from the big corporations, American United, which we want here, obviously, to, no, don't change it. We're making so much money off of this. We're going to scare you by taking away your airline miles to keep it all in place. So I don't know if I feel that good about supporting the letter.
Dan, did Thaddeus get that right? That seemed right to me.
Yeah, am I?
I think what you described is right. And as I was saying before, it's all very attenuated to traffic and our revenue. So my understanding is similar to yours in terms of, again, that's what I was saying before. It's really targeted at credit card processing and processing fees. And the assumption by the legacy carriers is that that's going to limit their ability to offer these rewards programs. Whether or not that's accurate or not, my concern is just that none of us really know what the trickle-down, you know, knock-on effects of the legislation would be. I think we are operating from what we are being told by A4A and the carriers that this is going to suppress participation in their programs and therefore suppress traffic. Whether you as individuals believe that competition is a positive thing or not, my point is you're acting in your capacity as an airport authority board member looking out for the interests of the airport in a pretty myopic and narrow way. And if you think this will hurt the airport, then I can see why you would vote for it.
And what I also understand is that the airlines are stating that this was perhaps just a sweeping approach to credit card competition reform, and they accidentally got lumped in that, and they're trying to get pulled out of this legislation through an amendment process anyway. My gut instinct was to stay out of this and let them figure this out as well. But then we did get that direct call from the airlines. So I wonder, Angela, if you could just maybe speak to your feelings too as an executive director on that too. Yeah, just overall looking, you know, it's unclear the extent that this would affect us. I think it's clear that this would likely have a negative, even if it's just slightly negative, effect on aviation, because just the total amount of, you know, discretionary income, if you will, would be reduced if the mileage programs are reduced, right? Because that's a currency in our world. But it felt far enough away, and again, it's not uniform. It's not like every airport has taken a stance on this. And so that's why, you know, initially when we discussed as an executive committee, we said, you know what, I think we can take a pass and sit this one out. But then American Airlines reached out on Friday, our favorite on agenda or on board packet day, and requested that we oppose this, that they really, you know, it's communities like ours that from their perspective would be affected negatively should they need to make hard decisions about resources, and that at a minimum they anticipate fares would go up if this passes.
The summary, if I can jump in here, the summary that I got, and I can share this with you guys, but related to tourism, the effect of the CCCA is that it will increase how much people pay for plane tickets. Among U.S. consumers, 44% indicated that they use travel-related loyalty programs, and that's kind of what this strikes to. So I was also not really inclined to have a whole lot of opinion when I got this, which was months and months ago, but it's obviously very germane to this conversation. But it really kind of comes down to the people that are using those travel benefits.
I might offer, as we look at these, from a consumer's hat, this seems like we need more competition. From an airport authority, when you have traffic driven here by those cards, that's the hat we're wearing at the moment. Mm-hmm. How does that, or could it, retard traffic here and then slow down some of the revenue that we have? There's two ways we all have to kind of look at this, but today we're wearing an airport authority hat.
But do we think that that assumption is actually correct? I mean, if you look at it from an airline's, of course they're going to lobby to get us to try and shut it down. But if the report, I mean, as a 30-year business traveler out of this airport, I know for sure I'm going to check United first, because that's where all my, you know, I've been building that one, and I get better seats and all the things. And I would be shocked if they just abandoned the whole program. It's because every airline is trying to keep its people under its own fold, and so they've got to extend something. I don't think it would actually go away, because that marketing strategy is so deeply ingrained in all of us travelers. I just can't see them not steamrolling forward with some sort of rewards program.
Just reformed.
Yeah, I.
And I think that the next question is this the appropriate role for this board? Do we want to dabble in,
right,
in this policy work?
If I can just make a couple of comments with regards to competition, using an airline-related rewards card is a consumer choice. There's always debit card and maybe cash, I don't know, but there's always a debit card. There are less expensive options that for processing. A debit card's much less expensive than a credit card. So, you know, consumers are making that choice that they want to use that card and earn the miles. If you kind of just do the back of napkin math on it, if a credit card company is charged a transactions fee of a couple percentage, and then they offer a mile for every dollar spent, which is basically 1%, they are directly, they're in theory paying for that program out of those fees. Now, in reality, if there's excess capacity on a flight, they're paying for the flight regardless. Mm-hmm. And that's why those some flights become more available than others. But I understand the interest of reducing those transaction fees, I'm not sure that reduction would ever really make it to the consumer anyhow. When you're talking about a couple percentage points, and I think there would be a lot of disappointment in passengers if those programs were. I agree that they probably would not be eliminated, but they could be greatly reduced. We've gone through periods of time, you know, I assume on United, I did on American, where
sure,
you just couldn't get a ticket for the life of you on mileage. So you know, I think it's in the interest of this airport to keep as much traffic coming in here as possible, and if there's any amount of it that is flying on miles, which I don't even know if there's anywhere for us to research that or tell that. Yeah, I know. Now we're really splitting hairs.
No, but I mean, that's where there's some airports, like, you know, Orlando is a good example of an airport where, like, the amount of traffic that happens there on miles.
Okay.
Like, I mean, when you talk about spring break travel, I mean, it's a sizable fraction.
Right. So that's actually a good way to think about it. I haven't, but, you know, business travel, probably not much because the company's paying for it, but personal vacation travel, tourism travel, especially when you're hauling the whole family, that's probably a good time with a lot of mileage that are used.
Absolutely. Although I do think that the mileage programs, I mean, I think there's good research on this, that business travelers are more inclined to fly in part because they reap the benefits in their personal lives with the mileage program. So I think it still could impact business travel. And again, we were on the fence about whether this should come before the board, because we don't think that the board opposing this is going to make or break this legislation. However, one of our largest airline partners has come to us and asked us to think about it from their perspective and to look at the effect it could have here and to provide a letter. And so that's why we put it on the agenda.
The numbers that I'm saying is that
I'm
sorry, go ahead. Harrison?
Sorry, do you mind if I just do a kind of an economic impact to the airlines really quickly?
Please, thank you.
And I don't want to take a position on whether you should or shouldn't do this, so I'm going to try to be factual. In answer to the question, 7.25% of your passengers in the last four quarters were on mileage tickets. So it is a reasonable percentage. That was 10.4% on American, about 6% on United. The kind of end result of these, you know, why the airlines care is that interchange rate, as you've identified, is what's going to buy the miles from them at above the cost of what it costs the airline to produce a mile in their loyalty program. That profit for American specifically is the only reason they were profitable last year. The actual business of flying airplanes was unprofitable for them. And so if you take away some of that loyalty revenue, which is what they fear this act does, it pushes them to be unprofitable flying airplanes, which generally means you're going to fly less. I mean, admittedly, that's a, you know, kind of A then B then C connection, but it could lead to fewer, you know, flights in communities like yours. It could lead to higher airfare. It could mean that they just figure out a better way to monetize a loyalty program. We don't know. But that's why they're pushing this and why it matters to American. You know, Delta is trying to get $10 billion a year out of their Amex deal. They are about $6 or $7 billion right now a year. So this is real money to them, and it's incredibly profitable money, which is why they like it so much and why they're so scared of it changing.
And they have a very big lobby that I'm certain is going to defeat this on their behalf. And so, but that is really helpful to know, Harrison. I think thank you so much for that economic impact. I still just drive it back to, like, the governance question that Dan asked us. Is this a place we want to be? And let's vote on that position. And I think this is really important to have the economics. And maybe if we do vote in this, we just set a precedent as we move forward that we don't want to play policy whack-a-mole with everything that's coming down the pike.
That's a great point. I sometimes worry about that with the other position I have, that it's like, are we in our lane here? And why would we venture out into this? And I know I'm kind of talking on both sides of this, but
it's
do very much embrace that view to say, you know, can we just be really good at what we do? Like, can we really stay in our lane and do the best we can to be caretakers of this wonderful airport that we have without getting involved in other things? So I think that's reasonable.
It's a good discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Harrison, did you say American's passenger volume for here was 10%?
So four quarters ending Q2, which is the most recent data I have, is 10.4% of passengers are what are called $0 passengers.
Okay.
So their fare shows up in the data as $0, which is almost exclusively award travelers.
Okay. And landing fees are based upon the aircraft weight, which includes the passengers?
Mm-hmm. Maximum landed weight.
So maximum landed weight, okay. All right. No correlation there. All right, very good.
Good.
I think, Lindy, did you call for the question?
I'm happy to call for that. Mr. Chairman?
Okay, let's go ahead. I think, unless there's anything else burning to mention, we'll just go ahead and call for a vote. Would somebody like to make the motion? We already made the motion.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign?
Nay.
Okay. 4-1. Well, appreciate your comments.
Sure, sure, sure.
Absolutely. No worries.
I was on the fence.
Motion did carry.
It's hard.
That's good.
All right, next item on our agenda is a resolution to adopt the Air Service Incentive Program. We've kind of gone over that a little bit on what the changes were. Lee had some questions on that last month. Appreciate that. I don't think there's been any significant changes since we chatted about it in discussion.
No.
Okay, very good.
Appreciated the discussion. We actually went back and listened to the audio recording because we wanted to make sure that we incorporated all the feedback. And I think, fortunately, it was a document that I think there were a lot of questions and education going on, but that everyone felt comfortable with as of last meeting. So that's what you see again.
I certainly respect your capacity each year as you work with this tool to make modifications, whether it be annually or biannually or whatever, to make it competitive to what we're seeing in the industry. So just recognizing that, I think as a board, that this is a fluid document as time goes by and modifications can be made. I'll entertain a motion regarding resolution number 2024-07 to adopt the Air Service Incentive Program, then we'll have discussion.
I move to adopt resolution number 2024-07, the Air Service Incentive Program.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion on the item.
Just thank you, Harrison, for working so hard with our staff, and thank you, staff, for really looking at so many different angles on this. And hopefully this will be a program that does exactly what we want to do, is bring more flights and bring more seats, which I think that was a major change, right? That if they had an increase in capacity, that was something we did not have in the past.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's a major difference. So bigger planes with more seats is always good.
Yeah.
Thank you all for your hard work on
it.
Appreciate your comments, Lee. Any other discussion? Okay, this is a roll call vote for this item. It's been moved, seconded, discussion's happened. So Commissioner Schrader?
Aye.
Commissioner Marshall?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Kleinman?
Aye.
And chair votes in approval as well. Thank you. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is our resolution 2024-08, rates and charges. And we've kind of seen a little bit of this, but there's some highlighted yellow in here, I think, for some of the changes to bring to everybody's attention. Maybe that's the next item. Angela.
Sure. So this is a document that is updated annually. Typically it follows the budget. It reflects the rates and charges that were assumed in our budget. So there's a direct correlation there. The changes that you see are all changes to the airline rates and charges. That use and lease agreement that we executed back in 2023, it has a rates and charges methodology that takes costs divided by activity levels and then discounts it based on non-airline revenue that we generate, and that's how we get to total rates and charges. So what you see is updated estimated rates and charges is how we describe it. That really impact the airlines. Now again, those are estimated and those get trued up at the year end process. We pride ourselves on being good guessers, but we're not good enough guessers to get that right. There'll always be that true up process to either make up for those charges that we undercharged airlines, or more than likely what we've seen and what we anticipate to see based on our conservative budget technique is that typically we end up owing the airlines a little bit of money and their actual rates and charges end up lower than what we charge them during the year. So that's the update you see. Some years we come to you with more of a comprehensive update. A few years ago we did that. We didn't see a need for that this year, and just from a staffing perspective and a resource perspective, that wasn't a high priority. I do expect that next year we'll be benchmarking again our rates and charges. Parking, which is something we'll talk about later, I think that's something that we'll revisit, and we'll want input from our consultants on where our parking rates are at. I think Montrose increased their parking rates 2 weeks after we did last time. So contrary to the Daily Sentinel article and the headline that we had the most expensive parking in the region only lasted 2 weeks. So happy to report. So we'll likely be revisiting that next year. But for right now, the only changes that you see are those changes to the airline rates and charges. And then
you'll see things shifted around a little bit to reflect the changes that you approved and we updated mid-year on our fuel flowage fee, where we're discounting the fuel flowage fee charged to military. I will let commissioners know that the contract that Westar has held has been extended with the military. They still haven't, it was up for RFP last year, and RFP was submitted. They keep extending that RFP result time period. Now it's first quarter of next year. So Westar has not implemented that change yet in the lower fuel flowage fee, because it's actually way harder with the government, because they're already under contract with that prior fuel flowage fee. And so they have continued to charge and remit back to the airport the flat 20-cent fuel flowage fee for military, and they will implement that lower fuel flowage fee once they have a new contract. That's something they've kept us in loop on, and we said we were fine with. It's easier for the military, doesn't want any changes to that either. So anyway, going back to rates and charges, the only changes you see are those airline pieces.
Questions for Angela.
What specifically is the terminal rental rate apply? How does that apply again?
So we charge the airlines really in two ways, plus the loading bridges, because loading bridges are tiny. That was a request from an airline that we charge those separately. But we charge for the landing fee. Mm-hmm. We charge a landing fee that's based on maximum landed weight and per 1,000 pounds of landed weight. And that's where we look at all of our airfield expenses, and that's how we come up with that landing fee. Everything inside the building, outside the fence, and then most of the security costs are in the terminal rental rate. The terminal rental rate is broken out into a few categories. The big buckets are, there's the preferentially leased space, so that space that truly is leased by the airlines for their use at the ticket counters and their office spaces. That's the smaller piece. Most of it is joint use and shared use space, so the common areas. And so what it is, you look at all the costs and you take the total square footage, you divide it by that square footage, that's how you get to the terminal rental rate. The joint use and shared space allocations are allocated monthly based on actual employments. Mm-hmm. So when you think about things like the security checkpoint, which we cover the cost for the security checkpoint, makes perfect sense, right, to allocate it on a per passenger basis. And so the airlines agree, that's why that methodology is set the way it is.
From a building, like a commercial building perspective, it's the CAM expense. And then instead of how many square feet each tenant is actually occupying, it's based on how many flights and or use that ramps the CAM up or down.
Exactly. So okay. That terminal rental rate does apply to the preferential use space, and that's based on the space they lease themselves.
Okay.
And then the joint use, but all the space is looked at holistically.
Yep.
And you take all the costs divided by all the space to get to the terminal rental rate.
Good stuff.
I just want to comment, thank you for mentioning that this is formula based, because I realize that other things are more discretionary, and I think that's important when we're looking at these rates and charges, whether we really have any input in it or not.
Yeah.
Right. So,
thank you. The input is in the contract, right?
Right. And understanding how it works is always important to us. But this is it based on a formula, not based on what we thought the market could bear or something like that, which we may do in other areas.
So what we do is we charge this rate throughout the year, and then as part of the year-end closeout process, we finalize the financials. Then you look at the airline piece, look at that separately to say, okay, based on these financials and these cost activity levels, what are the airline rates and charges? What is the airline revenue? It goes back into the financials, and that's how you finalize. I think it's a fun puzzle. The accountants do not think it's as fun of a puzzle. Actually, I shouldn't group them together, because Travis thinks it's a fun puzzle, and he's an accountant. Most accountants are like, what? The same reaction we have to most accounting.
For those on the board that like those kind of puzzles, spend 30 minutes with Travis to figure this one out, because it is complicated, right? So the decrease in the loading bridge fees, even though we're getting some new ones, what
Again, that's formulaic. Okay. And so when we look at our anticipated maintenance on the loading bridges, it's relatively low since we're replacing them. And then the cost to us, so we only charge the airline for what we pay. So if we're able to get grant funding for it, we're not going to charge the airlines. That's unethical, borderline illegal, and most importantly, it's wrong, and they're our partners. We're not going to do that. So with the loading bridges, we are using bill grants to cover 90% of the cost. As you guys will recall, our 10% match, CDOT's covering half of that 10% match. So we're responsible for 5% of the cost. And then capital costs, you're charging them amortization. So it's across the useful life. So it's a very low cost. That's why it's going down. Again, it's based on estimated usage as well. So the loading bridge one is also formulaic. We don't spend a ton of time on it. It's very small dollars in total, and then the fee. But it's important. Those per-use fees are especially important to ultra-low-cost carriers. So Allegiant, when we were negotiating the use and lease agreements, Allegiant's rep at the time, who is now with Breeze, it was really important to him that we charged separately, and all the other airlines were agreeable to it. So that's how we got there.
Mm-hmm. We just have the Paul Harvey rest of the story came up. Those of you who remember Paul Harvey.
No. I remember my dad was into it.
Sorry, Cody. All right, further questions for Angela? All right. We do have a motion on the floor for this. So this is a resolution. And I'll call commissioners.
We don't have a motion.
We did discussion first, didn't we? Okay, sorry. Entertain a motion for this item, number 2024-08, rates and charges.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve resolution number 2024-08, rates and charges.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Kleinman?
Yes.
Commissioner Marshall?
Yes.
Mr. Schrader?
Yes.
And chair votes in favor as well. Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Next item, resolution 2024-09, delegation of authority. Angela?
Sure. I'll speak briefly and then hand it off to Dan.
Okay.
This is a resolution that where we attempt to just spell out and make it clear the authority that is reserved to the board, the authority that is delegated to me, the authority that's delegated to the executive committee, clarity for all. We have an accompanying governance document, the purchasing and procurement policy. That one we update as needed. Much of the delegation of authority kind of points to that. Most of the changes that you're going to see here, maybe even all of them, they're mostly just to point to that purchasing and procurement policy instead of calling out specific numbers, just to minimize the risk that we could have policies in conflict. Something that we as a staff are looking at is the purchasing and procurement policy, those limits, and where they are, and adjusting those based on inflation. So the board can anticipate that we'll be coming to you with updates to those in Q1, but those don't show up here. Dan, is there anything else you'd like to add? You're muted.
Dan, I think we have unmute. There we go. Very good.
Sorry. My apologies. We have worked this document over pretty good over the last 4 years or so, and so we're not really proposing any major shifts in the dividing line between the board's reserved powers and the executive director's and staff's delegated powers. Angela mentioned a few of them. We've shown in highlights the others. The only other one I wanted to mention is that we've added this year the authority for Angela to approve an airline use and lease agreement using the standard form. And that's simply because now we have a standard form. We have refined and finalized the airline use and lease agreement. We have all of our carriers who wish to be signatories at the airport sign that. So we have a board approved document, and if an airline walked in tomorrow, as we have explained before, we could not deny them the ability to operate from the airport or the ability to operate as a signatory carrier. And so we had in there historically the right for Angela to authorize an operating license agreement with an airline that wanted to operate as a non-signatory, and all we're suggesting is that she would similarly have the power to execute an agreement with an airline to operate as a signatory using the standard form. So I think pretty modest changes overall this year. We're not suggesting any sort of major shifts in the allocation of responsibility.
And then maybe some minor lease modifications on size and premise, about 10% adjustment.
Okay. Yeah, the thought process
and
on that.
And again, that's because...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Dan.
I think we're going to say the same thing.
Angela.
So the thought process on that is airlines sometimes want to switch space around their lease space, that preferentially lease space, and because, for operational purposes usually, because there's a space that becomes available that they like better, or whatever, they need it for some purpose. And so those changes, you know, obviously are going to affect the total square footage they lease, but not in a huge way. So we just tried to call that out so that we can do that and be more responsive to our customers in a more seamless way, rather than coming to the board to approve an amendment to a United Airlines lease agreement because, you know, they want to lease this radio room because their equipment,
right,
you know, grew in size or something. So just recognizing those changes that are likely of no interest to the board and trying to keep them off the board meeting agendas.
Allow you to be efficient in your workflow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, well, at the same time, still respecting the board's right to approve amendments to contracts that you approve in the first instance. So
yes,
just trying to create 10% is a bit arbitrary, admittedly, but we're just trying to create some threshold of materiality when a significant change in the leasehold premises we would need to bring back to you, but something that's pretty minor, the examples that Angela gives, not interested, not really material.
What defines an airline as a signatory?
So a signatory means that you've signed the use and lease agreement. That's the simple definition.
Okay.
And so you've made some sort of longer term commitment to the airport. And so when you're a signatory airline at our airport, and this is typical of most airports, the advantage to you, in addition to kind of that security and locking in that space for that period of time, is that you get discounted rates and charges. So there's a premium that's applied to non-signatory airlines. That premium per our airline use lease agreement is at least 20%. So the terminal rental rate, it is 20, you know, they pay 120% of the signatory rate. And the airfield, when I got here 7 years ago, the landing fee was $3.80, I think is what it's at for non-signatory. And that has remained over that 120% threshold, so we've just held it flat for those non-signatory carriers. But that's, you know, as an airport, we want airlines to invest and be committed at the airport, so we try to incentivize that,
so
mainly through reduced rates and charges.
Are any of our current airlines non-signatory?
Breeze has not signed a signatory use and lease agreement. They're under incentives right now, and so when you have the airline incentives, the incentive structure of the signatory use and lease agreement, that math changes a little bit because you're not really paying anything at first. And the FAA has been, and DOT have been clear that you cannot discriminate in your incentive program based on signatory status, because ultra low cost carriers are much more likely to operate in a non-signatory manner than the network carriers. And so, you know, it's a proxy for business model and, you know, leads into discrimination concerns. So that's the carrier right now who's operating on a non-signatory basis. It gets nuanced and all sorts of wrinkles because obviously the Delta service is SkyWest service, and so we're working through all of that. And, you know, it's the same staff that services United, and so we're working through all those wrinkles when it comes to the use and lease agreements and the incentive program.
So is SkyWest the signatory, or is Delta American United?
Yes.
Yeah, very good.
So
good.
They all were all, will operate, yeah, in a signatory manner, and they're trying, okay, to figure out who should hold the leases on which space. So.
Good questions.
But you've done a lot of work to even get to this place where we are having signatory leaseholders. So that's, it's been a lot of work, and it's pretty,
yeah,
amazing.
It's important. And the value to the airport too long term is when you go to issue debt, you really need to have signatory use and lease agreements that are executed so that, you know, the investors can see and the market can see that you know, it's a proxy for your credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's your credit score. Do you have, what's the likelihood of your long term revenue generation potential?
All right. I don't have a motion on this yet, do I?
No.
So, would entertain a motion for resolution number 2409, delegation of authority.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the resolution number 2024-09, the resolution for the Board of Commissioners regarding the delegation of authority.
Thank you, Thaddeus. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Hearing none, we'll do a roll call vote. Commissioner Schrader?
Aye.
Commissioner Marshall?
Yes.
Mr. Kleinman?
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Chair votes in favor as well. All right, motion carries. Thank you. Next one is 2025 grant applications, approving the four airport improvement program applications for runway 1230. Replacement program authorized executive director to sign and submit the applications to the FAA. This is you, I think.
It is.
All right, welcome.
Thanks. So I realize that several commissioners I don't think have been through this whole cycle before, so I want to take a minute and kind of table set. So if we start at the top, everybody has been here for the FAA grant awards. That happens every year, historically between May and September. And that's when we find out how much money we're going to get for the year. And usually we work closely with the FAA and we think we know, but that's when we really found out. And last year we got a huge amount of money. It was more than we had really hoped for and expected. But really that creates the rest of the cycle. And so then we jump into updating what's, you know, on a big program like this where everything is dependent on what just happened. We have to go back through, update all the estimates, pull things forward to take advantage of that momentum. And we work on that in the fall. And then we submit those and sit down with the FAA and CDOT in October. We all get on the same page. For Junction, it actually takes two CIP meetings normally because it's a big program, and we have almost a table setting meeting, and then we have a secondary meeting where we solidify those numbers and what our plan is. There's any state applications happen in November, and then finally in January we turn in next year's round of applications. And so that's in January. You guys have an authority board that requires some extra approvals, so we do that in December, so that those can be submitted for the January timeframe. So that's what we're asking for today, is those applications. And so if you'll click to the next slide, the goal of these applications really is to make sure we have enough capacity. So what we turn in for these applications, we're showing four applications, and that's been closely coordinated with the FAA, but there's a chance that it'll be one or two or three applications, maybe four. They don't exactly know how their money's going to come in and how that will be structured, but really what's important is we want to make sure we keep enough cap space and we have enough grants that they have different buckets to put money in. Good or bad, however you want to view it, the last few years we've been wrong pretty consistently, even though we've coordinated closely, but it's been good news because they came back and said, hey, we need you to amend that in the spring so that you can have more money. We've tried to avoid that this time. I sent a detailed spreadsheet and spent several different phone calls going through it with the FAA to make sure we've lumped these things in the right buckets that they're comfortable and happy with. I think that's where we're at with these. Next year, we don't expect quite as big of a year as this year, but that is to table set really and get us ready for a big year in 26. That's the hope. So there's four grants in front of you. The first is the construction of Schedule 2 2025. That is for the remaining construction funds and engineering funds related to the subbase package for next year. The next three grants requests are all really just the table set to get us ready for a big 2026 package. And so that is a design RA with the FAA for $850,000 for really all their procedure development and all the work the FAA has to do. There's another application for runway 1230 pavement design. That is actually a reimbursement. You guys authorized that to really get us in this position 2 years ago. There's about $700,000 left. He actually asked me to make that for $1 million, so we had a little bit of extra money that we could slough into that if we needed to. And then finally, a design of runway 1230 final package. So there's some connections that need to be made. There is the final packaging of the top layer of that pavement. There's lots of odds and ends that need to happen. And this gives an opportunity, again, creates a place for that funding to go. And so we've talked through all of that with the FAA. That's what they've asked us to do. Now, approving this action just simply lets us submit these applications. You will have another opportunity when those grants come in to actually approve the specific grant with specific numbers associated with that.
Can you help just clarify in the board packet for me?
Yeah.
So like for example, number one, our sub-base schedule,
yep.
There's the $11.5 million, and then there's the federal 16.6. Can you just, what is the difference between those? One's our share, one's the grant?
Yes, can you, yes, sorry. Can you
yeah, do you see that?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
So this summary on the right side is all four of those together. That's why, that, sorry, are you?
So, close. Okay, I'm tracking with you. Yeah.
So each
thank
one,
you.
Within
yeah.
that packet,
yes.
Each one of these grants has their own numbers.
Yes, I see those. That's where I was trying to differentiate. Thank
what,
you.
What this is a summary of all of those
combined.
Together.
Thank you.
One other note, in the past, it's traditionally been 90-10 split.
split with that's this year and next year. It's a 95-5 split with a max of 2.5% from CDOT up to $250,000. So that's what this shows. It's a good time to have a big project from a federal funding standpoint.
Thank you. And this year is lighter than we expected it would be because we got so much grant funding last year. And, you know, in conversation with the FAA, when we look big picture and zoom out at their, you know, kind of our big picture funding plan, you know, this next year, this is everything that we have ready to go because they were able to give us so much this last year. So, you know, we're working really hard because they want to have 2026 be another large year. So I want to make sure the board knows that we do expect that we'll have a good shot at this is a large amount of funding, but, you know, a big chunk of funding while it's still 95-5 as well.
And is 95-5 specific to us, or is that just what the FAA is doing?
All non-hub airports. So the FAA divides airports up by, you know, they say the total aviation system, and then, you know, what's your size of the slice? So it's not tied to finite numbers. It changes all the time. But if you're not, I can't remember what they are. If Harrison's still on, he probably could ramble it off. But we are very solidly a non-hub airport. We're not the next step is a small hub airport. Colorado Springs is a small hub airport. Denver's a large hub airport. You know the large hubs. So non-hub, we have a ways to go before we hit that just because the aviation system's getting larger. But all those non-hubs, 95-5.
And what are the hub airports? What's their split?
Is it 60-40?
Oh, wow.
I think that's what it is.
Right on.
I think it's 60-40. Yeah. So it's more favorable to the smaller ones.
Yep.
Just recognizing that, hey, you know, it's the same. The specifications for the runway are the same whether you're a non-hub airport or a large hub airport. And, you know, our revenue generation potential is different than a large hub.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
And they're trying to create a system, and we're an important component to prevent overcrowding at some of the sub airports.
Well, I mean, their planes have to go somewhere,
right?
So most of those hubs are going to spokes, and most of those spokes are non-hub airports. Most airports in the U.S. are non-hub.
Okay.
So.
Good.
But yeah.
So are they bumping up against us this year, our subcontractor construction capacity, or?
The FAA, is that what you're talking about? No, it's just when we look at what our plans were. Again, you know, we had this meeting last year. Our plan was to do this, you know, this sub-base work over 3 or 4 years, plus all the navigational aid work.
Right.
Those dollars are smaller, but the importance is extraordinary, as you know,
sure,
as a pilot.
Sure.
And the coordination is extraordinary as well. So we really focused on those two things. Because they were able to award so much funding this year, you know, we're hopeful that it's going to shave a year off the project.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from a funding perspective, it's okay, let's get all that work we have set up fully funded, and let's get the other work designed and ready to bid out. When you think about construction, you know, we want to make sure that we're not bidding out work too far in advance of when the construction will happen, because
right.
that's not to our advantage. And so this next year we'll be preparing for the pavement work, and then we'll be bidding out that pavement work. Hopefully they can fund it in a similar way that they funded the sub base. Colin, talking.
No,
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm caffeinated now.
Nice summary. Colin, thank you, and Jeremy Lee, for putting the substance behind the numbers we see.
Yeah.
There's a lot of activity. We get the 35,000-foot look, but there's a ton of stuff that's gone in here. So appreciate you and your teams getting us ready for 2025 and part of 2026.
Yeah.
This was significant. Any other questions for Colin and Angela? Entertain a motion for item number E, 2025 grant applications.
Chairman, I move to approve the 2025 grant applications for 2025 Airport Improvement Program grant applications for the Runway 12-30 Replacement Program, and authorize the Executive Director to sign and submit the applications to the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA.
Thanks, Cody. Second?
Second.
Moving and seconded. Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Next item is the Garber Task Order for Parking Lot Improvement Plan. This is relatively small in relationship to what we've seen cost-wise for our $260,800 design, and provide bid support for landscape parking improvements, and authorize Executive Director to sign. Kevin.
So, those of you that have been here for a few years may remember that we just approved a parking lot and built a parking lot in 2020.
too. That parking lot's full. I think you can ask Dylan about how Thanksgiving holiday went. I think he parked cars the whole time over Thanksgiving.
Valet at the JT.
Didn't you have to find spaces for like 140 people or something?
Yeah, we get creative. I do want to make a shout out to Westar too for helping us out a little bit. No overflow on that, but yeah, we had to call a little bit of an audible on Thanksgiving. So.
Wow.
Yeah. We have 971 paved spots. We had 1,066 people park in the paved lot. So that took a tremendous amount of coordination with our team, helping people park, helping them feel comfortable parking in a way that looks and feels illegal on airport grounds, leaving the car, get on an airplane. And then even that wasn't enough, so Dylan helped, and Westar generously donated some parking for us to use. Thanksgiving is our Easter Sunday from a parking perspective, but we need to expand our parking. We would have expanded it beyond what we did that first round, but we had that lot that was sitting ready to just pave into our overflow, and this is a problem we're really happy to have.
So yeah, we've had forecasts done as part of the airport development plan. Gavin from InterBusiness is on, and he can correct me, but I'll take a shot at this. So this is a slightly updated forecast based on the holiday demands. Essentially, the 971 spots was marginal this year in 2024, but as we move ahead into the next few years, it's really not anymore. It's quickly not, especially if you consider the holiday parking. Originally, we had a placeholder number of what happens if we had 195 additional spots. That would bring us through 2026. The action today, though, we went ahead and just said, what happens if we add 350 spots? We don't want to create the exact same situation where we pay and get, you know, two holidays out of it and then do it again. So what you have in front of you adds 350 spots. That brings us, I mean, we'll see how parking tracks relative to the forecast, but somewhere around 2030 was the ballpark number of what our expectations are, those additional spaces would bring us to. If you wouldn't mind clicking back to the plot. So what we're looking at here is using this big kind of barren area south of the existing parking lot. What you see in cyan is generally the shape of that lot. The yellow is where I think we're going to have to remove some detention area and relocate it in the green area. I have a meeting with the city later this afternoon to talk about the specifics of that a little bit. So part of this too, you know, this is a new area, and we want to make sure that we're laying this out in a way that works with today's layout and today's need, but also has the ability to be expanded and be able to be connected with different entry points for product differentiation in the future. And we can't do that if we're just looking at it in a vacuum. So today's ask is to approve basically what's shown here, but there may be another task order depending on the size that comes back in front of the board that looks at kind of more of a planning exercise to make sure that, you know, a traffic study if needed, detention area, we may want to move that out of the way in its entirety to make sure that as we expand the next time that it's set up well for that. What we don't want to do is get in here and just move part of the detention and then just kick the can. We'd rather fix it all at once and complete the problem. I think one other thing that I skipped over is in 22, that parking, that overlay was funded with an SIP loan, a really low interest SIP loan from the state. The plan here, there's still a remaining amount of money left over from that loan. So that's the plan, is to fund this design with that. That's been coordinated with CDOT. They support that. And then for this lot itself, we're planning on bidding that in the spring. Angela's been in discussions with CDOT about an opportunity for potentially another SIP loan as well. I'll let her expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you have before you right now on this task order is what we know we need, and that is an additional parking lot. We think this size makes the most sense when it comes to economies of scale with the contractor and having enough space to last at least 5 years. There's lots we don't know, and I appreciate Colin and his team, you know, really divvying out what do we know we're going to need, let's put that in here, and then, you know, we have an agreement based on what we're going to do in the future. We'll deal with that in the future, because that's fair to everyone and on a time and materials basis. With CDOT, we've taken a bit of a similar approach, so contacted them to see, hey, you know, believe it or not, we need to expand parking again. is there SAB loan funding available? On the aeronautical side, there's not a lot of money available, but it replenishes itself over time. And so, you know, even a few months in the future, there's a couple million dollars available. However, there's a companion program on the highway side. So there's an SIB loan on the highway program on the highway side that is for roadway infrastructure projects, and it is underutilized. And that balance is still only a few million dollars, but it's substantially higher than the current aeronautical fund balance. And so Davey Lane, the CDOT Aeronautics Division Director, has been working within CDOT to see if we could look at a loan where they pull from both funds, because we're fairly agnostic to which fund would be pulled from, right? The current interest rate on SIB loans is 3.5%. They don't anticipate that going up. It may go down, likely to stay the same for the next 6 months or so as we're looking at this. But overall, just looking at that loan program as the ideal funding source, because it allows us to, in a really efficient and simple way, look and say, okay, what's the payback period? What does that mean when it comes to parking rates and charges? Colin hinted at this, and this is something that, you know, we'll certainly have as a goal next year and be coming to the board about, is differentiating parking products and, you know, accomplishing some of those goals we have when it comes to covered parking, all of those things. We aren't there yet. What we know we need to do is make sure we have more paved parking before next Thanksgiving. That is the first clear step to anything else we want to do. And so that's why you have this action item before you. This is as much as we know at this point. I mean, we expected Thanksgiving to be busy, but it even exceeded our expectations and our forecasts.
Certainly established the need. Thank you for that, having the numbers around Thanksgiving and Christmas both. Appreciate the input. Additional questions for either Angela or Colin?
I have a few. What does SIB stand for, and what are the terms of their loans typically?
So that's a state infrastructure bank loan. They're
okay.
10-year terms, no prepayment penalty, so you can pay back at any time.
Great.
They're typically paid just once annually. No origination fees. You know, the funds are held in escrow. They can be held with your bank, or the state can facilitate that. Our last SIB loan, we just held it in escrow with our bank, and they didn't charge us anything for that.
Okay.
So it works really efficiently.
And then I have a question about this future product differentiation. I'm not kidding. The one thing my friends and neighbors say to me when they hear I'm on this board is, can we get covered parking here? So is there really an opportunity here to accelerate this differentiation program? I mean, where you're putting this lot, I could actually see a remote lot charge, because it's quite a bit further, and maybe that gives us an opportunity to also give a premium lot, and I have ideas where that one might be, but I won't say, because there are people using those right now, but I wouldn't be very happy. Nevertheless, is there a way to accelerate this differentiation program?
So our hope is that we can get all of the parking improvements done before Thanksgiving, because you and I operate at the same speed.
Yeah.
So from a construction,
including
differentiation,
oh, right.
That's where we're really hoping,
yeah.
But we can't
okay.
do anything without this, because if you think about it, you know, your ideas are probably better than mine, but maybe have some similarities, you know, when it comes to what covered parking would look like with
mm-hmm.
charging stations and solar and all of that. You can't do any of that if you don't have an expanded lot.
Oh,
so
you
that
need to
you
take
can,
the overflow where
so
you
can
the
take
work.
It
right.
exactly. And so that's where, despite my eagerness to work on the things I really want to work on, which is product differentiation, I have had to be disciplined about getting this very boring parking lot expansion project
but very
figured
hard.
Out. We've worked very closely with our planners. Gavin is online. Gavin is with InterVistas. They're our landside planners. He is amazing with parking, and so lots of thought and ideas put into this. Like Colin mentioned, meeting with the city today, because
mm-hmm.
like there are, I mean, there's traffic implications
mm-hmm.
here.
And can we look back at the slide where it showed the projections?
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, 350 is going to hold us till what? 2020 through 2026, we're hoping?
I'll let Gavin speak. We talked briefly. It's somewhere between 2026 and 2030 is the expectation.
Okay.
Gavin, do you have anything to add?
No, 2030 is our best guess right now. I would want to highlight that holiday parking is notoriously difficult to forecast. It is extremely volatile, and so it's pretty much a best guess. We went on the high side this time because this year was so extreme. extreme. And when I say extreme, I mean, how busy is Thanksgiving compared with the rest of the year? Mm-hmm. So this year it was like 30 to 40% busier. Last year it was 25. So that's what, you know, we're trying to read the tea leaves here and provided a conservative estimate. But one thing that, Angela, you mentioned this to me, this also gives you a buffer to start doing some maintenance elsewhere.
Yeah,
in addition to the product differentiation. So you have these spaces, you can take others offline for, you know, overlays, repaving, whatever you need, without impacting capacity during the rest of the year.
So I think it's a tough decision to make to build a huge parking lot for just a certain day or a few days of the year. So alongside of this, maybe it also behooves us to have a better plan when we even overflow this lot, like literally striping the dirt out there, which is not very expensive, and it'd been a lot easier for you to say, look, there's now temporary parking out there.
Lee, thank you for volunteering to go talk to the city about that.
Oh,
that's your job.
Yeah, there are some complications associated.
Yeah, but the city, you can get event permits. You can get event permits.
Yes,
from the city,
exactly. So that's something we likely will look at. But because, and I appreciate Gavin you bringing that up, because, you know, we do in our CIP we have, I mean, these small things that round to, we never talk about them. You know, pavement maintenance in the parking lot, we need to mill and overlay the parking lot in the next 5 years. And so this will allow us to do that without forcing parkers into the dirt. They can stay in pavement, you know, they can do it the right time of year, things like that. So
certainly appreciate the focus on this issue. I've let you guys down a little bit. We're running a little behind time now. If you do have some specific questions, feel free to reach out to our experts who are here. Any other questions on the task order for parking lot improvements? Hearing none, entertain a motion for Garber task order number 4.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve Garber task order number 4 for parking lot improvement design.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. It's not a resolution. We can do this by voice vote. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Chair votes approval as well. Thank you. Next item on our is just for discussion, 2025 officer and committee appointments. Know that this is fulfilled in January. It gives you the opportunity for a fresh face, sweeter voice, whatever the case may be, for your next group. Coming up, Lindy Marshall is vice chair. You still have quite a bit of time left on the board.
I do. I joined in 2018, I think.
Super.
All
right.
2019 was my
19th
start, yeah.
Right. It's a sweeter voice. Finance and Audit Committee's up there. Chris West, Lee, you're on that as well. Dan Meyer, Clay Tuffley. Those are things we'll be discussing in January, is those reappointments and reelection of officers. So that's who's there. Just be aware of that. If you do have an interest in doing that, please lobby your fellow commissioners and reach out. So thank you for that. Draft board meeting calendar has also been presented. I think that's part of your package. It shows you a little bit about the dates. Thank you for preparing that. And goal performance, 2024 goal performance. This is a highlight, I think, for our December meeting. A lot of good things happened this year. Angela?
Sure, and I know the calendar is boring, but I want commissioners to know that next year we believe we'll only have 2 out-of-cycle meetings. When I say out-of-cycle, we like to meet the third Tuesday. Those will be in March. We'll meet the second Tuesday. Right now is what we propose. That's to avoid spring break. And then in October, meet the second Tuesday, so we can have our joint agency meeting the third Tuesday plus. We need to meet before the 15th in order to stay in compliance with state statutes around our budget process. So otherwise, we'd have to call a special workshop. So please provide any feedback you have to staff, and we'll get that finalized for adoption. I'll be fast on goal performance. I'm really happy to report that, you know, our goals are looking in really good shape for this year. As the board knows, we look at the year ahead and what we'd like to accomplish, recognizing that many of these goals are not going to get done in 1 year, but they need to be priorities that year. They probably need to be priorities the next year and maybe the year after too, some of these. But we also, I want to make sure commissioners know too that the goals as numbered are really intended to be in rough priority order. And then, you know, kind of those sub goals, which staff lists out just to, you know, articulate what we mean by those big, you know, kind of objectives, those the goals that are in numbers, those are also prioritized. So what you can see is that, and you know this, I think air service has been a phenomenal year, like their busiest year ever. And so I think we've achieved those goals. Unfortunately, we do have Allegiant leaving us, but you know, we have Breeze, who was added to the airport this year. And so I think we're in very good shape as we look into 2025. And frankly, I think we're in better shape than we hoped when we set these goals at the beginning of the year from a staff perspective. A couple other things that I want to point out is, you know, when it comes to airport sustainability, we mean that, you know, from a three-legged stool perspective, really looking at those components of sustainability that include environmental and resiliency goals, you know, thanks to the visioning committee and the work from our Gensler team on putting those resiliency goals together. I think we're in, you know, really good shape as we get into our conceptual design process to have kind of that framework of what's important to us when it comes to resiliency. Sustainability at our airport right now, a big area of focus is obviously our runway replacement program. I mean, it's being replaced for a reason. We do need to replace it. And so the fact that we were able to accelerate that program this year and find a lot of operational efficiencies is phenomenal. That is in way better shape than we even hoped when we set these goals. Really proud of our employee engagement and where we're at from a staffing perspective and just the cohesiveness of the team. I think we've made huge improvements there. Airport development, I think, is going well. As our staff, you know, that one, I think some of the speed of that is related to our staffing challenges that we faced over the last couple of years. And so now that we have a more robust staff, I think we're gonna be able to focus more on promoting new development at the airport, but really proud that this year we've been able to work with our partners, Bureau of Land Management and at Westar, to really get their development underway, as well as a few of our tenants who have grown their businesses. Any questions, any comments? I don't have to go through all of these.
Quite robust.
Really helpful.
Yeah, quite robust. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Angela, with the commissioners, really helps in the process of looking at the year and what's ahead.
So as you can imagine, those that are red or that one that's in red, that'll get carried over into a goal for next year as we start to prepare those goals. Some of the yellow will get carried over as well because it's not done. Many of the green will get checked off or just continue in the case of, I think, the runway program. but we would, you know, staff's working on our goals for next year. So if you have thoughts, if you have ideas, please reach out to us. That's something that we typically go over with the board at the beginning of the year, and then typically the board likes to take action to adopt those goals so that it's clear that there's alignment.
Yeah,
we love that.
And this is a really helpful tool for us too as we look at the executive director review every year too, because it's really a reflection of the good work you do and leading that team to get so much done so quickly.
Well, thank you. It's fun to look back and see all we've accomplished, because every day is busy, and you know, every day Dylan and I go home and we're like, oh, we have so much to do. So much we didn't get done today. But we love it. So
very good. Thank you for that report, Angela. Next item is our staff report. Angela, you want to lead off?
And actually I forgot that now that I'm looking at my presentation, I can see since air service was a focus in the goals, I just put these big picture slides in here. Just really wanted to take a step back and look. We zoom in usually when we're talking about air service on a month-to-month basis as a board, so I wanted to zoom out for a minute. 2024, we expect to have our second busiest year ever when it comes to total seats. So we actually had more seats in 2021, but as the board knows, as the community knows, not all those seats were filled. You know, remember when we just had that surge of seats in the summer and there was no way we could fill all those seats. So we expect this to have the most passengers ever, and we almost had as much capacity, but our load factors remain in the high 70s and the 80s, which is phenomenal. Really excited about that. Next slide. Wanted to talk a little bit about the regional capacity as well. We take zoom out and look big picture. We've seen the surrounding airports grow as well, and the one that I want to point out is Eagle Vale. I mean, Eagle Vale is growing rapidly. Alaska Airlines joined them this year, so Alaska is providing service for the ski season. You know, in total, passengers, Montrose, Grand Junction, and Eagle are airports that are going to be about the same size for a while, it looks like. Now, the distribution of that looks very different within the year, but the size of the airports is similar now. Can we go to the next slide? So I wanted, so for those who weren't here back in 2020, these are the air service goals we established in the pandemic. As commissioners who've been here a long time know, and you know, I just think we're in really good shape. Unfortunately, we weren't able to retain our Allegiant service, but Breeze filled that in with the Vegas service. So while we won't have service to LAX over the summer like Allegiant offered, we still have that Orange County service. And I think in our view, this still makes a lot of sense as goals, but for commissioners to consider, and you'll get all these slides emailed out to you, but if you'll look at those and think about whether you think this still makes sense. Next slide. So when we look at December, and I think we might have gone over this, but you know, you look at the traffic between our airport and the surrounding airports in December, you know, we'll average 13 departures per day. Aspen has way more, all CRJ-700s. They're growing. We're all growing when you look this summer. The difference is Canyonlands. Canyonlands, we talked about this a little bit, and I think more and more people have gone and used the service, so I'm hearing about it more and more. That is an essential air service market, and so that service used to be provided by SkyWest and went as Delta-branded service to Salt Lake. Recently, Contour Airlines took that over. They provide service, Part 135 service, so it's commercial charter service to Phoenix, Arizona, and they have a co-chair with American, so their passengers can connect, but the whole experience is different. And you know, you look, that those planes are a lot smaller, so on a Part 135 certificate, those commercial charters can't have more than 30 seats. So they're down in seats, but everyone else is growing. Next slide. Looks to be a busy ski season. March is really that peak ski season. But the growth here you'll see is more mixed. So for us, we're down slightly this March versus last March. Breeze is not providing that Orange County service in March like they were last year. That's most of it. And then American, you know, is down to 2 daily to Dallas and Phoenix. But when you look at the surrounding airports, most of them are not, do not have huge growth numbers. The exception is Eagle. Again, they have that new Alaska Airlines service, and the airlines are really tuned into Eagle. It's kind of the last mountain resort airport to get that attention. Gunnison, you could kind of put in the same camp, but Gunnison is so much smaller than Eagle that, you know, the percentages are big. But Eagle is really getting that focus. Whereas those airports like Hayden and Montrose in particular, you know, who had that Southwest service added, we've talked a lot about Southwest fine-tuning those schedules, and we're seeing that show up. So, next. And so while Hayden and Montrose have one or two more daily flights on average than us in ski season, once we start looking at May, you start to see all of those resort airports kind of turn off. They're back to just a couple flights a day to their main hubs, whereas our air service remains at 13 flights a day. And so I want to make sure that commissioners know what the surrounding airports, the service they have in this upcoming winter season is, kind of the role we play, and how when you look at total annual numbers, things might look similar. That's pretty much the only thing that's similar between the airports, because there's, even when we talk about them surging in the winter months, if you look on a daily basis, you know, they're at 5 flights a day and then 20 flights on the weekends. And so just the role of the airports is, the difference in the role of the airports is more pronounced now than ever.
How much surge does Denver get for the season?
They're busier in the summer, but their pattern looks similar to ours. You know, I'll take that as an action item to report back to the board. I'll have Harrison in the next few months brief the board on the Denver hub, but historically they, it's much more like ours, where they have really stable year-round service, but, you know, tourism in Colorado actually peaks in the summer.
Probably a separate conversation, but I wonder if there are ways we can market to these seasonal service passengers better, so that, because all those other airports are very expensive to fly into. Of course, we're pretty expensive too, but competing with Denver for seasonal service, I mean, you got to drive 3 or 4 hours from that airport, and there's probably 5 resorts closer to us than them.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, a lot of the GJT marketing is funded and, you know, managed by the Air Service Alliance. We work with them.
Okay.
And so they do a lot of geofencing of the ski resorts and things like that,
mm-hmm.
just because when you look, you know, there's a high propensity to travel in those consumers. And, you know, the, if they're having that experience, this place is beautiful in the winter, let's come in the summer. We want them to be marketed by GJT to, you know, fly GJT and spend a day in Grand Junction.
And then Jake Seaton, who is the chair of the Air Service Alliance Board, he also serves on a statewide committee under LEDIT, the Office of Economic Development,
okay.
and trade, and they spend money on tourism dollars. So we've got that voice also,
good.
Which is an important one.
Thank you, Angela. Next.
Sorry, the last slide I have is not air service, it's related to our goals. And this one, I'm sure everyone will want to look at, but I did want to touch on, and I've gone over this with Tom, our favorite banker, retired banker. and that's just, you know, once we're done with our budget, then we can really look and say, okay, cash flow forecasting based on really conservative assumptions. How does our cash look? And I'm happy to report that based on our planned capital improvement program, so the full runway program, and, you know, really everything except the terminal expansion, you know, that's the sizable piece that's not in there. You know, even with really conservative assumptions about passenger traffic growth, revenue traffic growth, you know, our cash position still looks really good. So we, our days cash on hand, you know, we do not expect we'll dip below 200. And again, that's with conservative estimates. And we'll be talking more about this, but I just wanted the board to know that, you know, we have been, Colin and I have been working on updating that, and, you know, we'll be running through scenarios, especially as we talk about parking. So, yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Angela, for putting all that together. Appreciate the commentary as well. Okay, Jennifer, finance and equity.
Okay, I'll just be really quick. We noticed we switched to comparative forecast this month. We usually do that the last quarter of the year. Everything looks pretty flat except for the capital expenditures and the back and forth of that is mainly the big thing that jumped out to me this month on the financials. But other than that, it seems pretty normal. Did y'all have any questions for me? Okay. That's my quick version. So again, this is just going to be cash was up and accounts payable was up and they kind of offset each other and that has to do with the big amount in the capital project program. And all of the payments over 100,000 have to do with the capital project going on.
All right, very quick and succinct report. Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate that. Any questions for Jeff? All right, Colin, capital improvement plan.
Well, I'm going to be quick, too. I think everyone's pretty aware of what's coming up with the air side and now parking on the land side. I'm going to give most of my time to Rebecca to talk about what's going to happen in the terminal over the next year. But before I do that, we skipped it earlier. The airport found out last week that they were awarded a $1.3 million grant for the tower renovation. So
mm-hmm.
we've got kind of a bigger comprehensive program to do improvements there, but it's a really important first step. So
that was pretty unique because that was $20 million across the whole
mm-hmm.
gamut. We got 13% or whatever, 6%
yeah.
of it. So
yeah,
yeah,
it's a good deal.
Nice job.
Yeah, great coverage.
Used to be able you could build a terminal for that or a tower for that. Not so much. Now you can just replace some windows.
That one was probably built for that, but it was 1961.
So good job. All right. Rebecca.
Hi, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'll try and breeze through this pretty quickly, but we wanted to give a high level update on all the different projects we have going on right now. It's a lot. And you can see here where the different phases are landing. Some of these are estimates, but this is what we are anticipating for the rest of this year, beginning of next year. So the passenger boarding bridge replacement project is well underway. We're reviewing submittals and they anticipate construction to start at the beginning of April. And then the next three projects listed there are really one singular effort. It's the interior refresh of the hold rooms, which includes interior materials, gate agent desks, and furniture. And it's broken up into three scopes here because it's really just three different procurement methods of how we're going to do that. The furniture will be going out to a dealer. The Arconis was approved in the last board meeting, gets ordered directly from Arconis as the beam seating. And then the interior refresh and millwork will go to on-call GC to be cost estimated. The next one is the basement IT scope, where we're consolidating some of the IT efforts into a singular place that will work really nicely with the new gate agent desk locations and create a lot of efficiencies. That also is getting wrapped up along with the interior content by the end, by before the holidays in December, and then we'll go to permit and bid as well. One you may not be aware of, the car rental evaluation. The airport had a different set of architecture and consultants design a common use car rental facility in 2010. We have those documents. It was never built, and so we did a report to evaluate how it would be constructed today, what changes might need to happen to bring things up to current codes, any other things that make sense to change in the design, and we're getting that cost estimated as well so we know what kind of effort that would be. And then we have the branding and signage replacement efforts, which are underway and will go through most of 2025. And then the concept design effort will be kicked off next week, actually, with a big site visit on Tuesday, and we're really excited about that one. So I have Becca Fall on as well, and she's going to walk through the interior scope really briefly, and we'll touch on the basement scope as well.
Thank you. Becca?
Hello, everyone. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Perfect. Okay. So just quickly to touch base, this first plan is the existing hold room layout. And so that's a total of 101 seats, and we're looking at relaying out that space and increasing the seat count. So next slide. So this is the new layout, and we've increased the seat count by 17 seats up here. So in addition to those new gate counters, we're introducing some lounge seating, some work tables, and kind of getting that beam seating layout to be a little bit more efficient. Next. This is the existing for gates 1 and 6. It's a total of 147 seats today, and that is including that banquette along the window. And then we are going to do a new layout and revise that number to 156 seats. So not as big of a jump down here, the additional 9 seats. But we are re-looking at that bench, making it a little bit more usable, changing the seat height and the back angle so that it is nicer for the passenger experience, as well as incorporating some power along there. So these changes will total around 26 additional seats in the combined hold rooms.
We actually expect the capacity to feel a lot higher than that, though, because, you know, when you... Those brown fabric covered chairs that we're replacing, like, have you ever seen four unrelated people sit on those? No, they're way too close. So, you know, we're replacing them with much larger seats. So we're treating seats like it's apples to apples, but not so much. So.
Next, please. And taking a look at the interior material palette. So carpet refresh, which is kind of the larger pattern that's on the background of all the other materials. And then all the materials that are laying on top are representing the different furniture finishes that will be sitting on top of that carpet. And then that large wood plank is the existing wood look flooring that goes through security, and we're going to start introducing that up by the bar by gates 2 through 5. This is a look at the new gate counter design. So this is specifically looking at gates 2 and 3. They are the two gates that have the largest amount of positions. And so this is the largest one. So incorporating some new monitors on the back wall and then six positions and starting to bring in that Core 10 material that is on the exterior of the building as a nod to bring that inside. And then this is a quick little snippet of the banquette. So removing all the carpet off of the banquette, rebuilding the seat and back so that it's at a proper seat height, and then introducing some intermediate solid surface tables that have power so that people can feel like they have their own little space and have a more comfortable sit. Next. And then the following slides are the proposed new furniture. So we can kind of just keep flipping through those a little bit so you can kind of get a style. I know we're over on time. But looking at introducing a variety of pieces that allow people different opportunities for how they want to work privately, communally, at different tables, as well as different lounge seating at different seat heights to really kind of appeal to a wide range of passengers. And then really starting to bring in that character that we've been showing from all of our concept and guiding design principles. Okay, thanks, Becca. And the last piece is just the basement. We just have a quick floor plan. We're consolidating the IT operations down there, so there will be the next slide actually has a better view of it. A single locker for every airline, and then a locker serving the Grand Junction network, and it's going to be kind of within its own contained room in the basement. It'll be on a raised floor, and so we're looking for really efficient and smart ways of incorporating this. It's a really great location because it can access the ATOs and the gate agent desks really well. I know we breezed through a lot really fast, so we're happy to follow up on anything, but wanted to respect everyone's time, so thank you.
Thanks, Rebecca. We might take just a couple of minutes for commissioners to weigh in on what they've seen. I know a couple of our members have been kind of actively involved in that, so thank you for that. I guess my only question was the brightness of the material for the gate counters in 2 and 3. On a cloudy day, are we still uplifting the passengers that have to, their flight's been delayed, and is it bright enough for them to feel good about where they are while they're waiting?
We have the bar for that.
That's right. Yeah. We have the bar.
We have 250 days of sun in a bar.
I know. that would just kind of struck me as maybe some tone differential seemed on the slightly darker scale than lighter scale for that, but that was my only thought.
So. What you can't see here that will be around them is lighter furniture.
Yeah.
So okay. Something that I think we're all really excited about is all of these fabric pieces that are durable. So like the light fabric is bleachable. Ben was very excited about that.
Okay.
But yeah, if it all looked like this, it would feel too much like a man cave. That is the downstairs project.
Yeah, where's the foosball table? Exactly. All right. Well, thank you.
We're not seeing the zebra stripe carpet in this picture, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
mimics water more. Yeah. When you see it in a larger scale, it mimics like flow of
okay.
water.
It's beautiful. It has
really
a lot
great.
Of like positive and negative space, and it's very static because like you know carpet tends to have movement, and it mimics water, but kind of a static component to water because like that's really what is post security or just staying. One thing we are doing is looking on a large scale to make sure that busy carpet. Isn't too busy on a large scale, and so I want to make sure commissioners know that. I know I've once bought a rug that was too busy after all to have in my house and not make me feel dizzy, so I really appreciate Becca taking the time to do that, but yeah, it will be that lighter.
All right. And do our users get a chance to kind of see what they'll be using? Do the airline folks that are checking folks in, do they get a chance to see this and say, yeah, that's really good, or?
Yeah, we met with the airline folks about this, actually. We don't have my favorite picture in here, where one of the renderings actually has the gate agent employee has a cat. that got a lot of attention. You know how the renderings have, like,
yeah.
animals and things in there. But there's a cat behind the counter, actually. So there's a lot of questions about whether they're going to get to bring their cats to work. But, yes, we solicited their input. And then we also solicited input from the project teams of the airlines. who have the design standards and things, because like what we're looking at is kind of the fun, pretty side. Well, what I think is the fun, pretty side on the inside of those desks, there's a lot of work to make sure the equipment all functions properly. And something we have here that is, you know, to our advantage is we have common use gates, so the airlines don't lease their gates, but we let them use their proprietary equipment. The combination of those two things, you know, offers the best passenger experience, but it's trickier to thread that needle. That's why you have this very large desk to make sure that multiple airlines can have their equipment still operate in an efficient way and in a seamless way. So yes, we've coordinated with them quite extensively.
All right. Any other rabbit trails? Okay, very good.
I wanted to just thank Lindy and Thaddeus. Their feedback was phenomenal. I mean, absolutely, we would not be here without their feedback.
Oh, you would be.
Oh, no.
The Gensler team's rocking.
I think Becca's looking to draft you on to some other projects once I talk to her. But I just, it was a lot of time, and they had incredible insights, and you know, that's where what we would have come to you with is probably pretty good, but we think this is exceptional, and it's because of you, so thank you.
It was really fun.
Thanks for recognizing their efforts, Angel. Appreciate it. We all do. Thank you for your investment of the time. Any other business that you may wish to bring before the board?
Yeah, what was it? I had something. Gosh darn it. It seemed like it was really important at the time. I should have taken it.
Probably was.
Yeah, if it comes back to me, I'll send out an email.
Okay, sounds good. Appreciate it. I think the city had a volunteer appreciation dinner last night. If you didn't make it, just know that you're appreciated as
yes,
a volunteer.
You are appreciated. Actually, thank you for buying me an extra moment. The thing that I wanted to share with you is that United Airlines is partnering with Community Food Bank for Colorado Gives Day, and they're matching up to $50,000 for contributions for the next 11 hours to the Food Bank of the Rockies. So
very
if anybody
cool.
is of a mind to give to Food Bank of the Rockies and have United help your dollars go a little further, it's a good day to do that.
Yeah, today is Giving Tuesday. Good club.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you for sharing that. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
All right, so moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Very good. Thank you for your attention and allowing us to go over.
Happy New Year, everyone.